and maintain the property nicely, and you attract the right kind of tenants into those properties. And so people pay rent every month, so you are collecting cash flow. Once you pay for all the operations, whatever's left over comes back to the investors as distributions. So it's a great business to be in.
Welcome to the Passive Income Brothers podcast.
Here, we take the fear out of real estate investing using real-life stories of everyday successful investors.
Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. My name is Tim Lyons, and today I am joined by my brother and co-host, Greg Lyons. How are you doing today, buddy?
Tim, I'm doing great. And, you know, we have a great guest today in as we kind of round the corner into the fall, as we get into September of 2022. My tan isn't where I want it to be, right, at the end of the summertime. So those watching on YouTube, you may just want to keep listening on the podcast because it's not a pretty sight. But I am fired up to talk about some real estate today.
Greg, I'm not so sure you've ever had a tan, buddy. But I love you.
Well,
just the same.
That's debatable. It could be a sunburn, but we'll get to that a different day.
Love it. So today we have a great guest, Sandhya Chaudhary, and she just has a phenomenal, phenomenal story. And I've been watching her, even though she says she's watching us grow, I've been watching her grow just the same. And she's just it's a pleasure to watch you do what you do. And I think your story is so powerful. So could you give the listeners a little rundown of kind of where have you been, what are you doing, and kind of where are you going?
Well, first things first, thank you for having me on your podcast. It's great to be here. And I do have a tan. I think I was born with it, just saying. So, yeah, I, like most Asian geeks, had a strong math background, got an engineering degree. So I have a bachelor's and master's in engineering. And so went into a technical career with a Fortune 500 company, realized pretty quickly that all the business folks are making all the decisions and telling us engineers what to do. So, of course, I had to go and figure out how they do that. So I got an MBA part-time while I worked my full-time job. And then I actually went full-time into the stock market once I had children. And the stock market was pretty great because I would just do it for a couple of hours a day and make enough money. And then once the kids are, you know, up and they're little, and I would want to go spend time with them. So that freedom of time was always something that spoke to me. To be having the flexibility to dictate my schedule and still feel like I'm producing something, not just in terms of income, but also the intellectual satisfaction of doing something. Instead of, you know, while five-year-old, three-year-olds might be great to talk to all day, it's not quite as intellectually the level of, you know, the bachelor's, master's, electrical engineering, adult conversation thing. So it was really nice to have that outlet. But I realized pretty quickly that I was paying too much in taxes and I needed to find a way to get into something like a small business or real estate that would help me offset it in some way. And since I did not have this handy person kind of background, I just wasn't comfortable with doing my own fix and flips or rental properties that I self-managed. So when a friend told me about multifamilies, where you could be an asset manager and employ full-time property management to take care of that day-to-day hassles of, you know, the four T's of a landlord, which would be the tenants, toilets, trash, and termites. So someone else can do all of that for me, a professional property management company. If I bought a large enough property through a syndication method, that's when it all made sense. And so I paid to join a mentoring program right away so I could see results quickly. And that helped me get into a network of like-minded people who were doing the things I wanted to be doing. So I started off as a limited partner using the money from my past employer's retirement account that I was able to transfer into like a solo 401k, or you could do it with a self-directed IRA. So that helped me invest passively in a few deals and to network with sponsors and then eventually be a general partner myself, an operator, to run my own syndication. So that's sort of in a nutshell my journey into multifamily.
Oh man, that's a great story. And, you know, I think with a lot of not only our guests, but a lot of our investors, we find that real estate can solve a problem. And there are varying degrees of problems it could solve. Some people just want another stream of income, it being passive in nature, but you use real estate as a career path. And it solved the problem of, hey, what am I going to do intellectually to make money, to solve my tax issue while still keeping that freedom of time? So, you know, real estate is so powerful. powerful in so many different ways. It could build wealth. It could, you know, it's a career path, but a lot of times it solves problems. And that is just a fantastic way to look at it. The being an engineer is a wonderful job, great profession, intellectually stimulating. But I think it's sometimes tough to go from being an engineer to I'm now a real estate investor or something like that. What kind of made you make that jump to say, hey, this is right for me?
The intellectual stimulation is still there. There's a lot of things very similar between my engineering job and what I do now for real estate. The underwriting and analysis is definitely, I love to geek out on spreadsheets, but also in terms of producing something and making a difference, right? That's what drew me to engineering is I'm going to solve a problem, you know? You went from big boombox to, you know, 1,000 songs in your pocket, right? That's how it evolved thanks to engineering. So we problem solve and we make the world better. And so the same thing you can do, but impacting one community at a time. So the whole community involvement is huge for me. Also, as a mom with kids and PTA stuff, I'm always used to doing something that will improve the community in some way. So we do that a lot at our properties. So both on the professional and the personal side, real estate seemed to solve a lot of problems and make it a more fulfilling way to be, again, you know, professionally active and make my personal side happy. Project management is another thing I did extensively in my engineering career. So that translates directly to asset management. I mean, you want to have systems and processes. You want to have your same checklist when you manage your properties, the same KPIs. Okay, what is my takeover checklist? What do I do at this time when I'm executing CapEx, et cetera? It's the same streamlined process and methodologies we use in the corporate world in running large projects, which is what I used to do. So there's so much correlation between the two.
Sandy, I mean, what I'm hearing is, you know, you're an analytic, you have an analytical mindset, right? So whether you're grabbing fulfillment and purpose from solving a engineering type problem or a community building type problem or putting a deal together, you know, you find that. But, and that makes a ton of sense. But take me back to the mindset. I really want to dive into this real quick. You know, here you are, highly educated, engineering degree, MBA, you're day trading, apparently doing well enough that you're staying at home and paying the bills, right? And then you say, man, I'm like, I'm not really doing as well as I thought because of taxes, right? So talk to me about the mindset about, I love what you said before about, even though you're so highly educated, you also made an investment in yourself and you joined a mentoring program. And I think a lot of folks have, including us, including Greg and I mean, massive, massive limiting beliefs about paying for coaching, paying for mentorship, paying to get into the room, right? Because getting into the right room can lead to so many second, third, and fourth order things, you know, and for us, it was really hard, right? I mean, I think I was one step ahead of Greg, you know, about doing this, but it really changed the trajectory of both of our lives, our business, by doing kind of all the same things that you're talking about. So, you know, talk to me about the mindset of going from W-2 to kind of going towards this real estate thing that people tend to think about. It's a shiny object syndrome, like, you know, real estate's a scam. It's a Bernie Madoff situation, Ponzi scheme, or it's like A&E, fix or flip, you know, it looks like sexy and stuff like that. But take me to the mindset.
The first thing I would say is anytime you get into something new, like real estate, if you've never done it before, is get yourself all the education you need. Because some people need to know all the boxes to be fully checked from A to Z before they'll dive into something. Some others are like, this is a person I really trust. And if they're doing it, it must be real, right? So whatever you need mentally to feel comfortable with a new venture, whatever that might be, in this case, real estate, that's very important. So once you get that education piece figured out, the next part is to actually take some action. So even for that education piece, don't give yourself a whole year. Say that 30 days from today, I'm going to answer these top 6 questions that help me figure out that this is something real or not, or it's a scam. Right? Give yourself a deadline, because if you don't give that deadline, you will drift. And a year from today, you'll still be where you are. And you will wish you had started sooner. So give yourself a deadline. Like if you're in August, September kind of timeframe, say before Thanksgiving, because after Thanksgiving, it's all about the holidays. So before Thanksgiving, I'm going to get all my top 10 questions answered. I'm going to make those phone calls. I'm going to read those books, listen to those podcasts, verify these properties are actually real buildings with addresses, for example, whatever you need to do, and say, I'm going to get this done. So it's the same thing for me. I knew right away that single family wasn't right for me. I'm not a person who wants to deal with the four T's, like I explained, or be called on a, you know, Thanksgiving day with a leaky toilet kind of situation. And the margins just weren't enough. As an analytical person, I felt like I was only going to make $300 or $400 a month, and I got to take a recourse loan for a mortgage. So right away, I knew single family wasn't right for me because I did the homework. Everybody talks about rental properties. So I investigated it and said, this isn't right for me. So same thing I did, dug into multifamily. And I was like, okay, for me to go buy a $10 million building, I can't do it by myself. There's just too many unknowns. And if I wanted to wait till I learned all of those unknowns, it's going to take me years. So how do I collapse those timeframes? And that's where a mentoring program came into existence. And I looked at myself and said, okay, if I wanted to go back to college and get another degree or something, I wouldn't hesitate. All of us would be all for it and say, go spend that $20K, $30K, whatever it is, right? And go get that degree. So I went to it with the same mentality. So I said, I'm getting an education. I'm going to improve myself so that I can do something faster. And here's the other flip side of this. If you spend so much money that it shocks you, why the heck am I spending $20K, $30K on an education when, you know, that's the kind of tuition I'm going to be paying for my kiddo to go to college, right? It's going to light a fire under you to produce results faster. It's going to scare you so much. It's like, okay, I drive an 8-year-old car right now. I could probably easily go get a brand new, I don't know, Mercedes or something and pay a pretty fortune for it. And instead, I choose to spend my money on more and more masterminds and educational programs. It's whatever lights you up, whatever gets you fired up to take action. That's what you have to do. And for me, seeing results quickly is what I need. It's like the same thing like getting a personal trainer in the gym. I bet I know all the things I need to be doing, but when I work out with a personal trainer, I get pushed that little bit extra. So it's sort of like that. That's the reasoning behind me paying for multiple masterminds even now and mentoring programs.
Sandia, I am so happy it's my turn to talk because Tim is just beaming right now. He loves that answer. He's so fired up right now. It's not even funny. So Tim, do you have anything to say to that?
Yeah, but it's your turn, buddy. So okay. You take it off.
All right. Go ahead. I know you're fired up, but you know, we would like to dive into kind of what you're doing now in the multifamily mm-hmm. space. But the thing that I heard you say as you got started in real estate as a limited partner, and a lot of people take that route for passive income, but mm-hmm. you used your solo IRA, solo 401k or self-directed mm-hmm. IRA to get started. And that is something I don't hear a lot of people doing. They'll use cash or something like that. But not only did you use a self-directed IRA, but that was like kind of your first foray into real estate. How did that come about? Did you have someone that you know, like, and trust? Because that's not something I've heard of, someone using their self-directed IRA to get started as a limited partner.
I had a friend and family friend who's, you know, kids and my kids go to school together, et cetera, always have rental properties. And he used to do his single family so well. And I was like, I never wanted to do that because of all the reasons I told you. And he told me about multifamily. And that's when I was like, well, it's illiquid. My money's tied up for several years. And I don't want to be worrying about what happens to it in terms of watching it. But at the same time, I knew that I could not use the retirement money, or at least that's what my accountant told me at that time. I could not use retirement money to fund my own deals. So it was a perfect match in that sense. Retirement money is not something I'm banking on producing a cash flow for me anytime soon. So it's a great way for me to sort of, you know, go work with several different sponsors, learn the best from each one that I liked so that I could incorporate all those ideas in when I do my own deal. And the second big one is you get a network, right? You've just invested large sum of money at trusting someone else. So now you get to go ask all those questions, read those monthly reports through, maybe even visit the property. So I invested in deals in the market that I'm interested in. I've lived in Dallas now for 32 years. So this is my market and this is where I want to invest. So I made sure I passively invested in those deals. And guess what? 2 to 3, 5 years later, when they sell them, I already know everything about that property in case I want to buy it myself. So I think like passive investment is a great way to get started if you ever want to be a general partner. But also it's a great way to deploy your retirement money because if you follow me on LinkedIn, I posted an article today just about the compounding effect of real estate. If you generally double your money every 5 years or so in real estate and compared to stocks where it's only maybe 7 to 8 years on average on index funds kind of things where you don't actively trade every little stock, you know, real estate is so much more powerful for building that legacy wealth for your retirement too. So I think it's like the best of all worlds to take your retirement money, put it into other people's syndications, figure out the best from all of them, and then use it. So that was my logical thinking to do that.
Yeah, no, I love that. So there's two things I want to touch on. One of them is about stock market, but the other one is about just to continue the conversation and stack on top with the self-directed IRA. So, you know, for the longest time, like that was one of the things that, you know, because I'm a New York City firefighter, I have a 457 plan and I thought I could use that, but I can't because I'm still gainfully employed. But, you know, the day I retire, which hopefully is just like two plus years away, the day, literally the day after I retire, I'm going to transfer my 457 funds into a solo 401k, which is a checkbook controlled vehicle that you can now, do a qualified rollover of your funds. And what I highly recommend people do is to educate yourself on what's possible, what's available to you. So, you know, nobody stays really at the same job for 40 years anymore and retires and gets the golden watch, right? So if you are one of those folks who is, you know, highly compensated, engineer, whatever, and you've been at multiple firms and you might have multiple retirement accounts kind of just languishing out there, and now you have multiple logins, right? Check out some of the custodial firms out there, or there's other, you know, there's a bunch out there. Please email me, tim@citysidecap.com, and I can let you know who we use. But you can actually combine all those accounts tax-free, right? It's just a qualified rollover. And now you have checkbook control. So if you want to go fund a Fidelity or a Vanguard account and buy stocks and bonds, you can do that. You can just write a check from that solo 401k or a self-directed, and you can go fund your equities account. But you can also invest passively into, I don't know, real estate investing debt funds, notes, non-performing debt funds, real estate syndications, multifamily, self-storage, build to rent. I mean, there's so many opportunities out there. And just like Sandia said, you know, this is not, you know, financial advice or not promising any kind of returns, but generally speaking, a lot of the deals that, you know, you and I are a part of, we're looking to double our capital, right? I mean, Greg and I are limited partners in all the deals that we do. We're looking to double that every 5 years. I mean, how powerful is that? I challenge anybody right now to pull up the article I just read this morning. If you type in S&P 500, 30-year average returns, you know, nominally, they're 9+. Nominally just meaning that's what the face value of the returns were. If you take the aggregate amount of growth divided by 30 years, right? And then, but inflation adjusted, I was shocked. It was like seven and change. Don't quote me. It was like 7.4, 7.5%. And that's before fees, right? So, and before taxes, if you were to take that out. So, I mean, we're looking at deals now that are, you know, 20% average annual return, maybe 18% average annual return, or 25% average annual return over that 5 year hold. You know, so what do you say to folks that maybe challenge you by throwing up a roadblock and say, you know what, real estate is just too risky, or I can't spend my 401k money on something like that?
I encourage them again to look at the data and the statistics, because that speaks to most engineer types. And I would say, if every month a lot of them put away like 10 or even 15% of their 401k plans into a retirement account, and I would say, why don't you just do it up to the amount that your company matches, like the 2 or 3% or whatever that is, and then take the extra 1 or 2% and instead put it also into a retirement account, but an IRA that is self-directed, to where you have the flexibility to put it into mutual funds or anything else, such as real estate. And I would also say that get to know the sponsorship team really well. So whether that's Tim or anybody else who lives near you, or however you get to meet them, like your college buddy, et cetera, go visit these properties, because that gives you a really, you know, this is a real hard asset. there are, you know, you can sit, check up on the records of this property. It was actually traded on this day. You can look up all the tax data. You know, there's a syndication attorney who puts all the material together. So it's pretty legit and real. And you can invest a small amount of your money. So if you've been an engineer in the workforce for over a decade, you probably have a sizable retirement account. So it's not like you putting 25 or 50K off your retirement funds into an investment is really going to change your retirement pool money in such a significant way, especially if you're at least 10 years away from retirement, right? You give a 10-year horizon, that's a huge amount of time. And you can test the waters by sampling one deal. And the other thing you can also do, as I've seen people do, is they combine the with one or two other friends, and together they come in as an LLC and invest that 50K into a deal. So then they're even then, you know, minimizing their so-called exposure or risk. But, you know, get educated. If you have legit fears, write them all down and give yourself 30 days to go verify these facts. Go on a fact-checking mission, but give yourself a deadline and come back and say, okay, I still have two questions to be answered. Okay, who else do you need to verify that data? Right? Go do background checks, whatever it takes. But don't indefinitely say, yeah, I'll think about it and drift. That's what I challenge people to do is get your questions together, get them answered from who you believe are authorities, but don't sit there in the sidelines, never participating in real estate, because we have an amazing opportunity here. We are becoming a renter's nation, whether it's millennial lifestyles, retiring baby boomers, or just the supply versus demand in these markets in the Sunbelt states, or the fact that affordability gap is going, right? So the cost to buy a single family home is getting more and more out of reach for people. And so they have to rent apartments. So why not take advantage of this huge opportunity by taking a tiny little slice of your retirement nest egg and trying it out on real estate? Because you know it's illiquid and you know your retirement money's long-term. So you're not really taking that much of a chance, I believe, compared to real cash that's sitting in the bank that right now you might need to pay for expenses, right? Taking a chance with your retirement money to me is much less risky.
These are stack on tap. I'm sorry, Greg, I got to jump in here. I'm sorry, buddy. I know it's your turn, but I got to jump in. Cindy, why are we okay putting money every 2 weeks from our employer sponsored plan and hoping for the best, as opposed to what you say? And I love every time, take 30 days, get your questions answered, go find the data, go find the person that's doing the thing that you want to do. Why are we still okay as adults blindly putting money? And if we get losses and we rationalize to ourselves, if we have a down year or we get crushed in COVID or we get crushed in the 07-08 downturn, 35% in one day, why are we okay saying, you know what, my investment horizon is good. I have another 30 years to work, another 20 years to work, whatever it might be. I'll make that money back. And then we can go right back with our day. Yet when we talk to folks about using their retirement funds for real estate, they're like, ooh, I just don't know about that.
I think the biggest thing is the sheep mentality. We all, This is what I did. I grew up, I went to school, got high grades, got a job, and squirreled away money because that's the only way we've been taught as far as a mindset goes for decades. It's what my grandpa did, it's what my dad did, it's what everybody does kind of mentality, right? It's what everybody does, so it must be safer and it's okay. Versus admitting that, oh my gosh, this mutual fund has hardly gone up in value. If I look at January 2022, 1st of January this year, to now, which is August, how much has my stock portfolio crashed? No one wants to look at it and admit to failure or admit that, okay, I've just left it in the background like the wallpaper in my house kind of, you know, it's out there somewhere. I don't really pay attention to it. But gosh, if I just could take charge of that retirement account, how much better could I multiply it? People are somehow afraid that if their retirement account goes away, they're just completely lost. And it's like, it's not going to go away. If you get educated and take a very tiny percentage of it to put it into real estate. And if you look at Wall Street and how, let's say, a Vanguard index fund, how do they pick all the stocks in it? I can guarantee you that 25-year-old sitting in front of a laptop in New York who's going about figuring out all the different mutual funds probably doesn't know what half the companies do who are in that mutual fund, right? It's just algorithms. It's just, you know, things that we engineers code and put in there. It's like, okay, it's an algorithm. So this stock, this, I don't know, its PE ratio was great. So I'm going to put it in the mix, right? versus here, it's a real asset. You can walk, touch, and feel it. You know its value is going to go up if it's in a market like, I don't know, Phoenix, Atlanta, Dallas, Carolinas, Tennessee, et cetera. So go study that. And then if you live in one of these markets, it's even easier because you could look at the building down the street and say, that's probably going to go up in value in 5 years. So I'm really not going to lose money by putting money there, right? It's the same thing. But none of us actually know that us ordinary people could go buy a building that's $20 million, right? Until this world of syndication came about. And we're still struggling to get the word out on that. So I would, again, go back to that same thing I've been repeating, which is, give yourself a deadline, get those questions answered, get the data you need. Don't just turn away and remember to talk to people who have actually done it. If you're going to get all your advice and you're going to be talking to people who've never done real estate, what are they going to say? Oh, no, don't do real estate. You go talk to a financial planner. What are they going to say? Don't do real estate because why? They don't get paid for it, right? How are they getting compensated? It's those funds that pay them. Oh, you got to go invest in this fund because I get a commission from selling you on this fund, right? So talk to somebody who's actually done it and who's successful at it, and then take a small risk if you want to call it that. And that risk goes down the more educated you get.
I think it all comes down to social norms, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, being in the third quarter of 2022 right now, we're in a recession, mm-hmm. if we call it that or not. Mm-hmm. But the social norm says that my portfolio will come back. I'm going to rationalize 20-25% losses. And, you know, as we currently speak to investors, you know, we have some offerings out there right now. They're very scared, very hesitant. I need to stay in cash. I can't do anything right now because of the market. Although real estate, and specifically multifamily, we don't measure the value of the real estate on a daily basis. It's not marked to market, right? So having your illiquid investment just kind of doing its thing for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years is, I think, better than riding the daily wave of the stock market. So as you sit here now in September 2022, where do you think the market is going with multifamily? And are you still investing? Are you still looking for deals? What's your kind of outlook on multifamily in general as we finish out 2022?
I continue to remain bullish on multifamily in the Sunbelt states, in some of the markets I mentioned, like Phoenix, Dallas, Houston, you know, Florida, parts of Florida, Atlanta, Carolinas, and Tennessee, again, because of the same economic factors. Even if you go all out and build out as many apartments as you can starting today, it's going to take you over 2 decades to catch up to the demand. So there is a huge shortage of affordable housing, and there's a huge demand. Look at the population growth, the migration patterns, your jobs, your people, your money, all of it is moving towards these Sunbelt states in these markets from your Illinois, New York, and California, the biggest migration patterns you can see here. So if you pick these Sunbelt states and you look at rental properties, where do you see a low occupancy? I mean, I'm looking around. I'm in Dallas. This is where I have the most data on. All my properties are well into the 90% kind of occupancy. We don't have any trouble getting tenants to fill in our properties as long as you pick them in good locations, right? Low crime, make sure they have a high median household income. So in terms of the coming years, I'm very bullish. The other thing that's happened is because of some rising interest rates and other things that the Fed is trying to do here and a little bit of inflation. So what's happening is properties actually are coming now to market at a slight discount, if you want to call it that, because a lot of people had bridge loans. And so they were hoping to refi them into permanent debt now, and the interest rates just went up. So they'd rather sell their properties now than get into a long-term debt right now. So in that sense, there's some good deals as well to be had, but the fundamentals remain the same. Is there rent growth opportunity? Is there other income opportunity? And both of these in locations and places that people are willing to pay for, right? Are your residents going to pay for those extra amenities that you're adding in that property? And once you have a thorough market survey that gives you that data, I mean, it's going to be a huge opportunity. And if you're sitting in the sidelines and not even participating a little bit, you're going to miss out and then you're going to regret it. Most people, like for me, I wish I had started on real estate much sooner. because we continue to thrive. The big thing that people forget with real estate is you don't just put money and sit there. The first of every month, people are paying rent. Most people still pay rent, no matter what you hear in the news media, right? And they want landlords who take care of them, who, you know, attend to work orders in a timely manner and maintain the property nicely. And you attract the right kind of tenants into those properties. And so people pay rent every month. So you are collecting cash flow, right? That's what, you know, once you pay for all the operations, whatever's left over comes back to the investors as distributions. So it's a great business to be in.
Sandhya, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. And what I love about what you just said is, and what you've been saying this whole podcast is, really follow the data, right? I mean, like, you know, so many people in the stock market or their retirement accounts or whatever, it's very emotional, right? Turning the news on, emotions, right? Looking at your smartphone, emotions, right? It's nonstop emotional kind of like investing and nervousness, where real estate tends to move like a barge, right? Very kind of slow. Like Greg said, it's not mark to market every day. But by and large, if you follow the data, where's the money, where are the jobs, where's the population growth, where's the rent growth, you know, where are the opportunities, right? But then right now, I get, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, real estate's so risky because they hear about the interest rates. But the fundamentals, like you just said, have not changed, right? If you run the property well, if you buy it right, if you put the right amount of debt on the property and you have a good property management system, you have systems and processes, you build out your team. You know, you have all these things working in your favor, which is, you know, rinse and repeat, you know, for folks like us, right? The biggest variable right now is the capital markets and then the type of debt product that you can qualify for and how much, you know, what kind of rate and proceeds and terms. That's the biggest variable right now.
If I could comment on that, I have to say my last two deals are fixed rate agency debt. Agencies coming back in a big way. We're getting great leverage. We're getting like 65% LTV on our deals. And agency means it's much more stable product because an agency like Fannie or Freddie is going to look at your trailing 12 months. How well has this property done the last 12 months? And did they produce enough to afford to make this mortgage payment? So versus bridge loans, look at the future potential of a property. So I'm still finding a ton of properties qualifying for agency debt. So I'm going crazy, like, okay, how can I keep up with so many deals kind of situation? It's not the reverse at all. There's more deals that qualify for agency debt, which is fantastic because then you have a fixed rate debt for the next decade or 7 years, whatever terms you get. You're still able to get 5 years of interest only, which is the basic advantage of a bridge loan. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. And the only thing to watch out for agency debt is make sure you don't have a huge prepayment at the end. So get a step down prepayment. That's it. Otherwise, agency is a huge winner. And that's the only kind of deals I'm looking at right now in 2022.
Love that. So, Sandhya, we have covered a lot of ground here, and I feel like we could bring you back for the next couple of days and we could do like a 5-part series because I feel very aligned with the way that you think and the way that you kind of, you know, put out your thoughts. I mean, I really do. I feel that alignment. So I hope the listeners are getting the same thing.
And I really, Tim, I really feel like I want to leave this podcast, go scrape some nickels together and invest some more. Exactly. I'm ready.
So
it's huge opportunity, the power of leverage. Do not ignore that because when you buy a stock, you're probably putting all your money into it. Here, we only put maybe a third or a fourth of our money into it. And so as real estate appreciates and you're only putting 25% down, well, you're really getting four times the return. So definitely check the returns long-term for both stocks and real estate. Really look at the data and don't get emotional.
I love that. Sandhya, we're going to jump into the last three questions. I asked one of the questions inadvertently during the podcast when I said, you know, what do you tell folks that say real estate is risky? And you already answered that. So I'm going to call an audible today, Greg, and I'm going to start off with this question. How do you vet a sponsor? So a sponsor is somebody like yourself, right, that goes out and does all of this for the investors, right, and puts a deal together and pays investors monthly or quarterly and does all that. If you're a brand new real estate investor out there, what are some of the things you want to do to vet a sponsor that you potentially may invest with?
I do the same thing that you would do with a contractor. You're getting this contractor to your house to do a 50K kitchen remodel. What are you going to do? Were you going to call your neighbor or somebody else who referred them to you and verify they did the same kind of job and they did it great and they produced the results you wanted? So same thing with a sponsor. I would ask them for a list of their past deals that they've done. in hopefully the same markets with a list of passive investors they could give me as a reference for every one of those deals. I would want to know what was their toughest time and what was their worst deal and how did they overcome that, because not everything goes as planned. I would also make sure that the team is cohesive and has worked well together before, so I'm not caught up in team clashes as they go progress. I would want to know very clearly who's in charge once the deal closes, because after that, that's the person you will be speaking with for the next 3 to 5 years. So you want to know who that is versus a middle person who's more involved in the upfront phase and then is gone after the acquisition phase. So I wanted to speak to the person in charge once the deal closes, who's the managing member of that LLC, and know how they run it. And once I get positive references from passive investors, I do my own fact checking of those addresses, those properties, you know, ask around my network of people. Again, your network is your net worth. And once I feel comfortable, then I invest.
That's a great one. That's a great answer. And, you know, our next question from Tim and I have a bunch of mentors. They don't know they're our mentors, like Robert Kiyosaki and Jim Rohn. Mm-hmm. And this one comes from Jim Rohn when he said, formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. And you kind of answered this one already too, but take it away.
Mentoring programs and having that focus and energy and the curiosity to learn, it never stops. No matter how old you are, you can always learn something from new from anyone around you. Even my children can teach me things because they look at the world in a different way than I do. So never stop learning. Always be curious. Always ask questions. Don't be afraid of, people thinking you're dumb. It's like, that's okay. It means I'm satisfying myself by answering this question, then I feel a little more comfortable with this investment. Ask away every question. There's no such thing as a stupid question. And ask of everybody, but be respectful and mindful of their time. See how you can add value back to them, if it's an informal mentor or if it's an actual mentor. Like, let's just say there's this cool person you want to learn from and they have a meetup. Go 30 minutes early and offer to help them set up that room, etc. And that way you get a little conversation going and you build that rapport with them. But see how you can give back and learn at the same time. And it's a fantastic way to live.
Sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. I love it. All right. Last one, Sandy. Are you ready?
Sure.
So Robert Kiyosaki, some people love him, some people hate him. I tend to love him. But he says something that can, you know, rub people the wrong way if they they don't know where he's coming from. And he says something like this. He says, savers are losers and debtors are winners. So in today's kind of economic environment, what does that mean to you?
I would say that you definitely still want to do what is your comfort zone, but you want to expand it a little bit. So in terms of savers or losers, you want to save enough money to where if you lose your job or your primary source of income, you're going to be okay. So that's your comfort zone, right? Especially if you have a family you're going to take care of. You have to save a little bit. But the rest of your money, if you're just sitting and leaving it in the bank or some mutual fund that's not really appreciating in value, then you're sort of missing out on your opportunity to use leverage and take advantage of the huge benefits of real estate, which the leverage is the biggest deal there, right? Leverage and compound interest, leaving it there long-term. 90% of millionaires do so because of investing in real estate. So don't miss out on that. So I kind of agree with his philosophy that way, with the caution that you definitely want to have enough of a nest egg that you feel secure for about 6 months of living expenses.
Love that. Well, Zandia, this has been a masterclass on investing, mindset, getting in the right rooms, how to add value, how to vet sponsors, you know, how to really get, you know, level up your financial education. And my biggest takeaway was give yourself 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. Give yourself 30 days, put a deadline on it and go take that action. Go ask those questions, read those books, listen to podcasts, go to meetups, investigate masterminds and mentorships. I mean, Greg and I are a part of a few masterminds. And if you would have asked us a couple of years ago if we would do a mastermind, we probably would still be laughing till this day because we just had such scarcity mindset. So anyway, how can our listeners find out more about you and what you're working on? Where can they go to find out more?
My website, multifamily4u.com, where it's the number 4 and Y-O-U spelled out, is a great way to reach me. I'm also active on LinkedIn as well as Facebook. But of course, you can contact Tim and Greg to find me as well.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us this week. And we look forward to talking with you guys next week.
Thank you. Love it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Passive Income Brothers podcast. We would be grateful for your support of our podcast by giving our show a 5-star rating and review and subscribing to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to take inspired action after listening to this show so that you can start building out your passive income streams. Finally, head on over to citysidecap.com to connect with us and find out more information about how to get started passively investing in real estate.